Hi everyone, welcome to the Power Time Show with Matt and Scott. And on today's show...
Our Microsoft partnership is a cornerstone to our success as a business. It has been and it always will be. If the worst comes to worst, I'll go back to what I was doing before or I'll become the bricklayer. You've got to have grit, determination, and you've got to have that in spades more than most people will. The glue that kept us together was culture. Can I swear on this podcast?
It's power time. Get ready, let's go. Unlocking secrets leaders should know.
It's a very special privilege to introduce a special guest to the show, John Kelly. So John has been in the Microsoft ecosystem for a long time, worked across a lot of major projects. He's currently the Global Microsoft Alliance Lead at MCS and also one of the co-founders for 1820. So we're really excited today to have him in on the show to chat about the transformation, what it takes to build a company, what it takes to move that company into a larger entity like NCS. And of course, moving forward, what's super exciting around the Microsoft practice within NCS throughout Asia. So I'm sure, Matt, you've got a couple of words you'd like to say about John as well. So from your point of view, Matt.
Obviously, I know John very well, considering obviously he's been a massive influence on my career. He's also an extreme character, so it's a great conversation today. But JK, why don't you go introduce yourself to the audience? And then from there, I've got hundreds of questions to ask you. So away you go, mate. Introduce yourself.
Yes. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Really excited. I've never done a podcast before. So quite excited about it, particularly with you two guys hosting it. So John Kelly, the artist formerly known as the CEO of 1820. I was also a co-founder, not the sole founder. So I was a co-founder in 1820. And I had a bunch of different roles, both in the business when we started up and we scaled up the business. So I was, co-CEO, founder, head of Microsoft Alliance, head of sales, head of HR, unbelievably all at one time. And when we started the business and prior to that, had a, lengthy career, Australia and outside of Australia, in North America and Europe, running large transformational programs, predominantly in FSI and probably a 50-50 split between FSI and government. So, which led me towards, launching 1820 and giving that a go.
How do you get from, running projects and working with, a lot of those top companies to creating your own business and really going on that journey? What was in your mind set around that when you created 1820, and what was kind of driving you to do that?
It's a good question. I think the catalyst was fatigue of dealing with the same problems over and over again with the traditional IT vendors in the market. The stage that we launched 1820, and I always talk about this, Matt knows, on Salesforce, I was literally looking at becoming a bricklayer or a carpenter or something where I was so exhausted from running these large transformations, dealing with the same problems over and over. And I was getting paid really well. I was always a gun for hire, right? So I was like, you pay me this much money, I don't care. I'll eat glass for 6 months, 12 months, 3 years to get the job done. And I always got the job done. I'm a dog. I've got a goal, I just go after it and I do not quit, to my own demise a lot of the time. So, looking at that career, and I'd already had a fairly lengthy career. I was about 35 at the time and felt like I was about 105 because of the amount of stress you're continuing under running these large transformations. So I was really fatigued and looking at the change careers or give something, do a Hail Mary and give something a go. And I did the Tom Brady and I threw the ball and, 1820 was launched and it did really well. But fatigue was definitely a major element of it. Market opportunity, obviously, like you're not going to go, I'm really tired, so let's go risk everything I've ever had and all my parents' savings and their retirement money and try to launch this really unique idea which doesn't have a lot of substance behind it. So second thing was obviously a unique market opportunity, which we saw. I mean, just to elaborate on that, when I used to run large transformational programs, the typical problems I would run into, accountability from vendors. So we've signed a contract. You know what I want. I want a house with four walls, three windows. And then suddenly I get a house with four walls and three windows, but no roof. It's like, guys, come on. You know the house needs a roof. Well, it wasn't in the contract. So that's going to be another change request. And that's going to be another change request. And that's this plagued my whole career to the point where I was continually, all my job day to day was fighting with vendors, right? Purely because of those accountability and values questions, right? There's an accountability, there's a kind of honor component to that. You know the outcome we're trying to reach and get it. Having to hire multiple vendors to get an outcome is a very disparate model, which is very hard. So you're trying to run a $50 million program with six vendors to get one outcome, extremely hard. Six different cultures, six different contracts, six different personalities running those separate teams. I mean, if you looked at that equation from the top down, you would say it would never work. But no one really took the time to unpack it and go, why do we need six vendors to get this one outcome? So the model was broken, in my opinion. There was a distinct lack of accountability in the market. And I'd already had a team that had been following me place to place for many years. And I built the Galacticas of project delivery, right? So I had the best architects. I had the best project managers, the best program managers, the best BAs that I've had years and years to hand select. And in the teams that I built, either you made it or you didn't, i.e., if you're playing with Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi and you're kind of a little bit below, you're going to be shown up pretty quickly, right? And it wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't like we're out there hunting for people, but people would naturally go, okay, this is probably not for me because of the pace and the ferocious kind of nature of our teams, right? So had a really capable team. And the only bit we didn't do was engineering. So I used to write the business case from my perspective, work for CIO. We get that approved. I build the program structure. I bring in my team. So the project managers, the BAs, and the change of adoption specialists, we then govern another vendor, which would go to, I'd run an RFP, you know, the usual suspects. We'd go through, we'd bring them on board. And I always found that my team was much higher skill level than the traditional tech guys on the market. So I'm going, the only bit we don't do is build servers. We manage the project. We've got architects who govern their architects. We've got project managers who manage it. We've got BAs who then interface with their BAs. And change of adoption was an unspoken thing. No one ever invested the time into it. And that was crazy considering my mentality was always technology is only as good as the people using it. So if you add all these elements together, the only bit we didn't really do or I didn't do was the engineering component. And then the further you move into the stack with Microsoft, as you would know, it's not that much engineering anymore, right? You're just moving into the cloud, right? And so when I add all that together, I said, look, there's a unique market opportunity to be a really accountability kind of driven supplier. I had all the contacts in the market. I had a really good personal reputation. So did my business partner, Justin, at delivering projects. Small facts is a lot of program managers in the market getting paid $2,000 a day don't actually deliver projects. If you look at their track record, they bail when it gets too hard and they go, well, we kind of got 80% there, so I've done my job. But Justin and I saw things through. Come, you know, rain or shine. So we had a really good personal brand and we had a great team. And the market opportunity I just explained was to have a really talented team of people that are accountable, values driven, and end to end. So 80-20 was launched. We write the business case, we do the roadmap for customers, we build the program, we do all the project management, we do your business analysis, do all the technical components, and we do change adoption training. So it's kind of like Lord of the Rings. We have one vendor to rule them all. And if you look at that, it's just so much simpler. You've got one throat to choke or shoulder to pat for a great job. You don't have all these commercial constructs. We integrate with your team. We've got our own reporting style, our own governance layer and all these kind of things. We would come along and say, hey, we'll fit into your business operation. We'll report into your governance boards because we work for you. You kind of see the mind shift, you know, the mindset shift. So combination of all those things was a market opportunity. Fatigue was the reason, and just, you know, the definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing, right? So I thought, we'll take a risk. If the worst comes to worst, I'll go back to what I was doing before, or I'll become the bricklayer or carpenter or whatever I was going to do. I'm not that handy, so that probably wouldn't have worked. and we'll go from there. So that's kind of how we got started.
What a story. And I'm definitely familiar with some of this. JK, you talk about that all the time when we sort of introduce to customers, and it's really compelling and it really relates. Talk to me about year one and how was year one for you? And this particular story of you traveling over to, I think it was Inspire, meeting Judson for the first time, that maybe you can share that with the viewers. I often find that a really classic JK story as well. But talk to me about how year one, what were the challenges? How did you get started? All of that kind of stuff. And maybe drop a little sprinkle of that story because it is a classic. So it's back over to you.
Yeah, so how we got started was my business partner finished before me at Transport, which is our last gig. That was a 5-year, couple of $100 million initiative to bring Transport New South Wales together. We co-ran that. And we started looking for clients. We went to our previous bosses who are all quite influential CIOs and said, look, we've given you everything. We want to start this business. Will you give us your support? They said, yes. We went to Microsoft, who I'd had a great relationship with over the years as a customer, and said, to John Barrett, actually, the godfather of Microsoft in Australia, and said, look, John, I'm thinking about doing this. Can I get your support? He gave me his support very kindly. And then we went looking for our first client. We landed in Endeavour Energy and things kind of kicked off from there. They'd been working with a large GSI for, I think, a year on a piece of work and couldn't get a result. We got a result in about 3 weeks. I thought, okay, well, there's something in this. And our client base started expanding from there. The first day working on the business for me was flying to Inspire, and I walked into the Las Vegas, into the hall there, and I was a fish out of water, and I was like introducing myself. I'm John Kelly from 80/20, and people are, you know, 60/40, who are you type thing. And it was quite daunting, right? You're just wandering around there with no brand, no real, you know, you're developing your elevator pitch and all that kind of thing. And it was quite daunting. Ended up, you know, building a number of relationships out the back of that. As we scaled the business, you know, obviously more clients came aboard. Woolworths were, I think, our third client, and they really put us on the map. I think the rhetoric in market was, you know, if you do get to work with Woolies, you know, they're a large organization. There's a bit of risk involved with that. But we had nothing but a good time with Woolies once we got in the door. They really put us on the map as a business. And today are still our number one customer. So they've been our number one customer for 5-6 years, long embedded relationship to build on trust and getting things done. And the business started kind of scale from there. As our Microsoft partnership grew, I went back to Vegas again for the Inspire, and I was heading back there. And I'm Kim Yardley, who from Microsoft, who's always been a massive advocate of ours. We wouldn't be here without Kim. Massive shout out to Kim. She said, look, you know, it's an opportunity to meet someone senior at Microsoft. And by virtue of my personality, I'd see everyone as the same, right? So you can put Barack Obama, who I'd love to meet, by the way, is, you know, in front of me, and I don't think he's any better or worse than me necessarily. So it's just a mindset my parents have always instilled in, you know, be respectful to everyone, but we're kind of all the same. If you carry yourself in the right way, there's no reason there should be necessary levels to that element of life. So I've always looked at life that way. And you know, Kim said, look, you can meet someone from Microsoft, you know, who would you like to meet? And of course, I want to meet Satya, so which is something I've always wanted to do, and hopefully I will one day. So she was like, no, seriously. And I was like, no, seriously, I'd like to meet Satya. So I got onto the, you know, Google, and I started researching what things that Satya was passionate about. And then I tailored my response to elements that I also believed in, but kind of would resonate with him. And I filled out the form, and it was about 2 weeks before Inspire, and I found out that I wasn't getting to meet Satya. I was a bit disappointed, but said, look, you can meet Judson, and you're the only Australian partner who's meeting him. And I think there's 7 different partners globally. So I went to Inspire, and I researched who Judson was. I didn't know exactly who he was at the time. And I realized, well, this guy's quite a big deal as well. And we got to the round table and, you know, sat down with Judson. Lovely, lovely man, very, very intelligent. It was pretty clear early on. And he said, you know, in kind of a bit of banter, he said, look, are you the 80 or the 20? The names are in front of us, the name cards with the company in your name. And they'd spelt my name wrong. And I said, mate, that's a really good question, but I'm not falling into your trap. Let's talk about the real issues here. You spelt my name wrong. And we had a bit of a laugh, and it kind of broke the, everyone was kind of really uptight in that meeting. I think people were quite nervous to meet someone of that seniority. But again, I kind of see people, or you treat them respectfully, then we're all human, right? So had a great meeting with Judson, and yeah, I've stayed in contact with him over the years, and it's something I've always appreciated. You know, I think he's a very senior person and must have a similar mentality that we're all here, we're all delivering the Microsoft ecosystem, partners are important. And yeah, it's always a funny story that Matt and I kind of comes up here and now there, but Yeah, our Microsoft partnership is a cornerstone to our success as a business. It has been and it always will be.
Maybe Judson will listen to this podcast and then send the invite to Satya. So
he'll email him the potty link. I know him, so that'll definitely be happening.
Matt's on speed dial to a lot of these people now. So, you know, we'll see what we can do there. I think we'll organise that. But look, at the end of the day, when you're undertaking like a business like this, there's probably a lot of people listening to the show that are going, you know, it's hard, right? Like it's a difficult thing. So what are the top considerations? Like, what are you thinking? Like, if I was going to go and start a business right now, I can see a gap in the market and obviously AI is hot, right? Like, so the obvious thing right now is we're on the AI wave, you know, there's a big gap in the market. There's not many partners embracing it. So there's probably a lot of people listening going, I'm going to get on this first mover advantage. What are the top three things? I'm not talking about tech, right? I'm talking about, you know, is it people? Is it getting the right, you know, the right team? Is it funding? Where did you think, you know, you would have, what would you have done better, I guess, to accelerate? That's probably the question around that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the first thing, I mean, if you go from a chronological order, the first thing would be, what is your business idea? Is it a solid business idea? Who's out there doing it? Are they doing it well? Are they not doing well? For the guys that are doing well, is it something you can augment off the back of that to do it slightly differently? You know, what is your USP? What's your unique selling point, right? First point. And you need to have that really, really clear. We didn't have it as clear as we maybe should have when we started, but our passion, we were so passionate about the problems we faced as a customer, like I talked to you about before, and why are we launching this business? It kind of overrode our need at that time to have a really clear USP. We thought we knew the reasons, but we could have crystallized that more. Having that is obviously key. Having grit and determination, like this is not for the faint-hearted. You know, we had a business that started and sold in 5 years, one of the fastest growing businesses in Australia. I think we were the fastest partner to be managed by Microsoft. I think people think a lot of time, you know, particularly since I've sold a business, it's osmosis. The guys tripped over, they landed on a leprechaun and there was a lot of luck and, you know, COVID must have been because of COVID. There's obviously an element of luck involved, right? But grit and determination, my business partner and I worked harder than most people are willing to work. That's the reality of the situation for a long time. We put ourselves under a lot of duress, you know, chronic stress, you know, for when you're growing a business at that speed and that pace, a lot of things can break, you know, and it came at a lot of personal cost to both of us. And that's something people don't see. And when you say that it's all luck and it's this or that, you're kind of taking away from the hard work that was put into that. So I always go with grit and determination. I don't think starting a business is for everyone. You've got to have the right characteristics and you need to be. And once you start, there's no, you know, it's like having kids, right? I delayed having kids actually for our business because 80-20 was my baby. And now that I have kids and people say to me, once you have kids, your life will change. Yeah, absolutely. They're right. And my life has changed now that I've had kids. But you can't just abandon them having a hard day. Oh, well, you know, I'm out. And it's the same with the business. Once you're in, you're in. You've got to have grit, determination, and you've got to have that in spades more than most people will. You need to have a really strong team. I mean, our business is a people business. Without the human beings and having talent, I mean, you're dead in the water, right? So we started with a team of about 60 people who'd been following us for over 10 years, Justin and I. So when we launched 80-20, these guys are the best in the market. And when I say best, I mean the best Matt knows. And we just shifted them across. So rather than follow Justin or John individually, we're now part of 80-20. And everyone was bought into it. These guys had seen the same problems that we'd saw. So talent is a massive part of it. You can have the best value prop in the world without the talent. You know, you're a paperweight. So having talent is obviously important. And having culture, right? As a business, the glue that kept us together was culture. So when you're scaling at the pace that we're scaling our business, which was astronomical, right? From year one to year three, I think we were about 200 headcount or close to, and about $35 million in revenue. So it's massive growth. But it's like, you know, putting Ferrari motor in a Hyundai i30. Like Hyundai i30 is not built to go 280 kilometers an hour. It'll do it, but probably a few doors and panels are going to start falling off. And it was like us, right? You'd have to strap in and go, okay, well, where are these problems going to come and how are we going to solve them? Because you don't have time to have prolonged problems impact the business. So A big part of that was having a team that believed in the business. We were there for one another. We're a values-driven business, honesty, integrity, you know, collaboration. We set a bunch of company values. I'm not going to go through them all, but one of them was the Atlassian one, be the change you seek. You know, we're a young business. We're not going to have everything perfect. We're not an NAB who's been around for 50 years. So if you've got a problem and you can solve it and you're part of the team, well, step up and don't complain about it. Actually, let's work together to solve the problem. And then when you do that, you're all part of the same fabric. So the culture of the business was a massive component that kept us together as we scaled at incredible pace and a major, major part of our success. And it still is today. People commented externally, you guys are like a tribe, which we are. We're a very tribal bunch. We all want to win together. We want to celebrate together. We have, can I swear on this podcast? We had a no dickhead policy in the business, right? We're like, okay, you can be God mode. You know, I used to sit in there as a program manager and watch two architects, you know, Gandalf and the other guy, like go at it in a room full of people thinking, what is this? What are you guys doing? And they just wanted to be the smartest person in the room. I never think I'm the smartest person in the room, so that's easy for me. But what are you guys doing? What is this posturizing that's going on here? So when we had started the business, I was like, okay, you can be the smartest person in the world, but if you're abrasive to our team and our customers and you think you're the smartest person in the world, this is not the place for you. I'll take a guy two levels down from you in your alleged IQ or whatever your metric is, but they're a good person. They're a values-driven person. They want to be part of a team. Right, I'll take that guy every day of the week. And that's what we did with the business. There was, if you look at our team, there was, you wouldn't survive here for 5 minutes if you're that abrasive, I'm smarter than everyone mentality. So the culture of the business was very important. And when you say it's very important, you need to maintain that integrity by going, okay, if you've got to ride an apple, they're going to go quickly. Right. And as a business, we did that really well because we wanted to protect the culture of the business at all costs.
John, I'm so aligned with what you've just said. Having run my own business before, all of those qualities I think are super important. I think a lot of people underestimate the amount of work and the sacrifice, the financial burden, the impact on your family, these kind of things that people actually put in behind the scenes to make some of this work. So thank you so much for your honesty around that, because most of the time when we're interviewing people or chatting to people, you know, they don't expose that side of running the business, right? Which is the truth to it. So yeah, fantastic comments. Yeah.
Just context on that. I mean, just to be perfectly open, so your listeners are, we didn't take a salary for 3.5 years. So I went from earning very good money as an IT program manager on a contract rate, you know, at, you know, $1,600-$1,700 a day for many, many years, to $0 for 3.5 years. And I borrowed my mum and dad's retirement money. So this didn't work. There was no Del Boca Vista for mum and dad, right? So there was so much risk. I imagine that you know, this thing doesn't work and your mum and dad, what do you, like, that was what we had to do. I mortgaged my apartment on top of this. I mean, these are things that not many people are willing to do. So when you know, that's the thing I say about people when they're going, okay, well, there's a lot of luck involved, or they perceive there's a lot of luck. Actually, there's probably a bit of luck with market timing. We hit a peak in M&A when we sold. We're always a very attractive company to buy. But that doesn't take away from the grit, determination, and risk. Like, if you look at that equation, you've got grit, determination, great idea, risk. I am a risk taker. I've always been a risk taker. I'm a gambler. Matt knows that. We go to the races together now and then, and he sits back with me and goes, what is this guy doing? risk is a massive part of the equation. And I think a lot of people succeed. It's like, well, how much risk are you willing to take versus the guy next to you who's got a very similar, great idea? And it's the same with sports. It's the same with a lot of things. So you can't underestimate the sacrifice that takes we took in our business and it takes to be a successful business, and the risk element you have. You got to have an educated risk, and you got to weigh that up and go, in for a penny, in for a pound, I'm really need to go the distance on this thing. You know, so that's another key element.
Yeah, amazing, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, completely agree. And Jack, hey, we've known each other so well for so long, and I can definitely see all the hard work. It's not the fruits of your labor at the end. There's a shitload of work that goes into it, and I've seen it all firsthand myself, all the late nights and, you know, all the challenges and, you know, teething problems when you grow and all of that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, everyone kind of stuck together, yeah? And everyone kind of had that common goal to make sure that it was all successful as part of it. And a funny story, before I actually joined 80/20, I had another job. lined up and pretty much signed and sealed. And before I spoke to JK and Just at the time, Kieran Mott, Factor CEO, actually introduced me to JK. And out of my friendship with Kieran, I was like, oh, I better go have this interview with JK. And then after talking to those guys within 5 minutes, I was immediately about to sign the contract with 80/20 as well. So that whole culture that JK talks about is definitely real. And sort of 80/20 has always been really founded as part of that, a really culture and sort of tribe that JK talks to as well. So proof's in the pudding with me. When I would literally had another job signed and after speaking to these guys for 5 minutes, I'm still here, what, 3.5, 4 years later as well. So John, talk to me about, I guess, the time of you originally a modern work business. What was the decision to kind of pivot to these Azure and, you know, all these other sort of technology stacks, and how did you go about sort of that as well?
Yeah, so we launched as a modern workplace because that's where our history was. So all of our team and my history and Justin's history, that was very much predicated on, you know, EUC, modern work, transformations. So that's a logical place to launch a business. Once we launched and we were gaining traction and were quite successful in that space, we became a premier kind of partner in Microsoft ecosystem in modern work. Our business model was, as I explained, you know, one vendor to rule them all or minimize the vendors to rule them all. So we were then going, okay, well, we work with our customers from inception, writing the business case, writing a technical roadmap, standing up programs, you know, delivery of those programs, technology, change adoption and training. And you look at it and go, okay, we're across that end-to-end elements of delivering a transformation. If we were then stuck to just one workplace, we kind of would have had that breadth, but not the depth. So what we then looked at and said, look, there's no reason that our delivery model and our partnering model with customers shouldn't span across the Microsoft cloud, right? So you've got one partner that can do this end-to-end from a program perspective, but they should also be able to do it from a technical perspective. So then we went to market and we launched our Azure practice first. I mean, to launch a practice is fairly easy, in my opinion. You find an expert in the market who is passionate about growing something like their own business, and you bolt them onto your business and you get your first sale and you start building your team beneath them, and that starts to grow, and you know that grows to a certain point. Then you look for the next one, which we did when we were very fortunate to get Matt. And the next practice we launched was a BizApps practice, and we were very fortunate to get Matt, aka the Sweet Prince.
I was waiting for that to come out. Yeah, it took you about 30 minutes for JK's nickname.
Wait a minute. We just gonna go back here. The Sweet Prince.
Scott, you haven't heard this?
No. This is news to me. And this is gold, John. So yeah, let's delve into that a little bit.
Well, we launched this Azure practice. We got Sayan Ghosh, who's now gone back to Microsoft. I don't know if you know Sayan, Scott, but he was one of the smartest people I think I've ever met in my life. I sit in the room and I was just being really quiet because I was intimidated by his IQ. But he was a massive part of our business, and he really put everything into it. And then he went back to Microsoft. But he launched the Azure practice. Then we went to launch our BizApp practice. I got the intro to Matt. And when his name came across my desk, I was like, you know, I haven't met someone with the last name Noble. And the first thing I thought about when I think of Noble is like a noble prince.
Yep.
And then I think I got on the interview with him and I called him Sweet Prince on the interview, and it kind of I didn't know him from Barra, so, and he's probably thinking, who is this? and then it went from there, and then everyone just started calling me. So everyone in the whole company calls him Sweet Prince.
Everyone calls me in the internal chat. It's Prince, Sweet Prince, everything. So
he's like
giving away the secret. In JK's phone, I'm the Sweet Prince as well. And all JK's friends call me the Sweet Prince.
Tell you the nickname I got about 10 years ago that kind of stuck with me because it's taken me 10 years to shift it. Maybe that's for another time. But I feel you now, Matt, but you're now the Sweet Prince to me as well. So that's
where we're at. Yeah, there's a logical connection. Matt Noble Prince, the Sweet Prince, you know.
But let's roll with it, yeah.
So, John, I got another question for you. Fantastic comment so far, right? Like, but the number one question everyone's probably thinking right now is why NCS? You know, why the move to these guys? What kind of prompted that? And how's it going?
Yeah, so, you know, good question. We, given the growth of the company, we were approached a number of times. Well, it happened twice, actually, in 2020. So we're a 3 or 4 year old business at the time. We, again, because we won a few awards, we placed fourth in CRM, we're in Deloitte top 50, twice. And we made a real name for ourselves in the market as a premium Microsoft partner. Business was going really well. starting to pay myself so I could stop eating baked beans. It was fantastic. And I got approached by two, you know, of the top four consultancy firms. Said, look, we've taken a lot of work off them, right? So I'd still love competing against the big guys because I'm competitive. So I love winning. I think we had a really good compete against some of the bigger players, being a niche boutique expert player in this space, that with all the cultural and values things that I mentioned. So we kind of disrupted the market. We were massive disruptors. And I got approached once and I thought nothing of it. I thought, you know, 3.5-year-old business, why would people be interested? But our numbers were really strong. For a professional service business, I challenge you probably to find numbers that strong, because we're very lean and we're very conscious about where our money went as a business. So I was approached once, I kind of was flattered and laughed it off. And then I was approached again and I went to my business partner and said, look, something in this, right? We've been approached twice by the big guys. We had a 5-year plan from the outset. It was to go hell for leather and sell the business in 5 years if we could get to the top of that mountain, or get investment and scale this thing and go from a small to medium player into, like, this thing's going to be $100, $200 million business, right? And like more of a household name. And I then, after being approached twice, I said, look, there's something in this. We're going to need to speak to someone. And I went and spoke to a couple of advisors and they said, look, even though you only had three and a half years of trading, your numbers are incredible. You should run a process. We ran a process, started in November 2021, finished in November 2020, it started, finished in November 2021. And there was a ton of interest through that process. We had more interest than these guys, our broker, Alia Capital. Shout out to Alia Capital. These guys were amazing at running our process. They said there's more interest in the company than we've seen. Again, because of the growth of the company, the market reputation and the numbers were great. And so we came down, we had four offers in the end. And from those four offers, you know, there was three global companies that you guys would know. I won't go through them, but household names. And then there was investment, private equity firm, a big name as well. And their model was to roll us up and us to be the centerpiece and then build a much bigger, larger company. And the other offers were, hey, we want to bring you in and be part of our company. We want to buy your business. So we looked at the different profiles of those offers and then we did, okay, well, we're going to go with the acquisition path because it made sense for us at the time. And we thought there'd be a lot of opportunity for our team. So we weren't the kind of people that go, okay, well, let's sell the business and go sit on a yacht somewhere and we don't care what happens to it, because we're passionate about every single person that works in the business and our customers. So we were very purposeful around, okay, well, this is our baby. Who's going to help? Where is the most opportunity here? And culture was a massive driver for us. It was almost our number one decision point metric. And we looked at NCS and the conversations we were having were about, okay, well, John, tell us, deep dive on the culture of the business. How did you guys? But NCS were asking the right questions about culture and their plans to grow the business were really impressive. I didn't know at the time. I never heard of NCS. But then I learned they're obviously owned by Singtel, own Optus, and in Asia they're 8,000 to 10,000 person company. These guys are massive, and you know they're very focused on the future. You know, being prepared for the future, growing solutions that are, you know, leading edge and all that type of thing. And when we mixed all this together, NCS presented as the obvious choice for us. It was a hard decision. The people we were doing business with, Howie Lau and Andre Conti, who represented NCS, they were really honourable. Not that the others weren't, but we just really, you know, it's a connection as well. But a major focus was, where are people going in the future? What's the opportunity for our team? And that was almost a key decision-making point along with the culture of the company. So NCS represented very well in that space. And yeah, as a result, we went with NCS.
Fantastic comments, John. I think, you know, what I love about your story so far is it's never really been about money, right? Like, it's culture, it's people, it's how can we drive a different outcome for our customers? How can we have a better experience, you know? And I think that's really key to the success of 80/20. And, you know, having been on the vendor side, you know, working for Microsoft and you guys, I saw the result of that firsthand over the last few years, and it's been truly transformational and amazing. And you know, really enjoyed the engagement. It's just been a fantastic journey. So it's good to see, sort of sit on the outside and watch the impact of the way that you've worked through that. So what do you think now? Like, you now that it's all said and done, what are you looking forward to in NCS and going and creating and doing differently over the next sort of year or two?
Yeah, so, and thanks for that comment, Scotty. It's great to I was always very proud of our brand in market because our values and our quality and all those things were really, you know, our brand was really stellar and still is.
And they really shone through. Like, I'm serious, the brand really shone through. So you did a fantastic job.
Yeah, it's a proud dad moment for me, right? Because, you know, in my opinion, you're only as good as your reputation in a lot of ways. And you're, this is saying, you're only as good as your last project. But it was really proud to know that our team has thought about that way in the market and our brand, which was, we started from scratch, you know, four, five years ago now, right? So to get a brand from zero to where it is today in that period of time was just incredible. So I mean, again, I'm really proud of. In terms of what's next for me, I'll talk about me and the company. So the company is in the process of being integrated into the broader NCS group. NCS purchased Arc, who I think I'm predominantly an AWS player, Riley, who are a Google player. The Microsoft business is 80/20, which has now become the Microsoft Solutions Group. So NCS Australia is very quickly now forming into this, you know, T1 consultancy. The plans, which I love big, hairy, audacious goals, right? And Howie, who's one of the senior leaders out of Singapore, said, look, I want to create Avanade 2.0. And I love big goals that are hard to reach. So I was like, okay, I'm on to this. So 80/20 has become the solutions group in Australia. Our plans are to solidify the integration in Australia and then create a true APAC or Asian relationship as Microsoft has shifted to that model. We're shifting to that model as well, where we're sharing solutions, IP, resources, go-to-markets across the region. To underpin that, they asked me to move to a global role. So I'm global head of Microsoft for NCS. And I report into a Singapore leadership team now. So my goals very much focused on growing our Microsoft relationship. When I started the business, I spent about 80% of my time doing sales, but growing the Microsoft relationship from the ground up. So it's a natural, happy place for me. I love working with Microsoft. I understand Microsoft really well. I just enjoy growing a Microsoft partnership. It was something I was really good at, I found out later, and something I was really passionate about. So I've stepped back into, it's kind of like starting the business again for me. So it's, you know, I'm like a phoenix rising through the ashes type thing. I started a business very much focused on sales and growing a Microsoft partnership. Scaled the business, we sold the business. I'm back now doing this at a much bigger scale. I use the term standing on the shoulder of giants, right? NCS are a $44 billion company with 10,000 people. So it blows my mind that I'm now back to this origin of the business. I'm an employee again, which is, you know, bittersweet in some ways, but it's nice at the same time, with a big goal in front of me of kind of growing their Microsoft alliance and into this global behemoth. I love shooting towards massive goals like that. So that's my personal position. 80/20 is in the process of being integrated into the business as the Microsoft Solutions Group. So any opportunities for NCS, you know, the Microsoft Solutions Group deliver. And our team have taken really prominent roles. Our leadership team have taken prominent roles, including Matt, who now runs our biggest practice, I think, in scaling out those different practices from a Microsoft perspective. So, you know, I said earlier that I was really focused on a team getting into great positions in whatever new company we went with. And it's starting to happen, which I'm really proud about. You know, I was never the guy to never money focused. I've never been money focused. I'm too frivolous with money to be money focused, to be honest. So for me, I enjoy, you know, winning. I have goals that aren't necessarily financially driven. And what I find is if you drive towards something you're passionate and you believe in, the money will come. Right? I think people that say, I go, I want to be a zillionaire. I don't know. I think you struggle to get there personally. If you go, I want to grow something different. I want to be proud of what I do. I want to create something unique in the market. I want to get, you know, keep this many people employed for this long, you know. We kept people employed through the pandemic when everyone else was letting go of people. We didn't. We just took no money as founders, right? And that's putting your money where your mouth is. You know what I mean? We paid bonuses where the big banks weren't paying bonuses. And we were a small little company paying bonuses through the pandemic. So there's things like that that I look back and I'm proud of. But then the other element is now as we kind of stand on the shoulder of giants. That's Matt and members of our team are taking much more senior roles in the business. There's opportunities for people to go to Singapore and work from Singapore now because we got bought by a Singapore business. And I think we're going to see a lot of that happening in the future. We're going to see a lot of people going across over to Singapore and working and growing their careers in this. You know, I used to work for enterprise businesses, started a business because I wanted to get out of enterprise and do something different. And I wound up back in the enterprise business. That's not necessarily a bad thing because I'm actually in a position where I can influence the way things go, as opposed to, you know, before it's like snakes and ladders. I was in the matrix. I was in the game and I couldn't influence. So I got out of the game. I started my own business, did all this, scaled it, sold it, and now I'm back in the snakes and ladders or the matrix. But I do have a somewhat influence in the way things go. So it's kind of cool how life has played out and the way things have played out. Outside of business, I've got two young daughters now. I actually delayed that part of my life. I was 80, 20 was my baby. I joke about it, but it's not really a joke. So I had my first daughter when I was 40. I'm 43 now. I've got a two-year-old and a six-month-old, which is a whole new challenge. And I'm very much focused on that next stage of my life with my family. And, you know, I spend a lot of time working on the business. So it's a, you know, you got my wife talks about filling cups. I, you know, people need to fill each other's cup. I think I've got a water cooler over here and I need to shift some of that back towards the family. So outside of the business, my focus is finding balance with my family.
Awesome. And shout out to Ash. I know Ash has been the biggest support for you on your journey. Obviously, being in the role that you've got, there's a lot of time away from family. I'm sure she's going to be listening. If you started sort of 80-20 again from scratch, like what's that one thing that, you know, the listeners can go away with and go, hey, that's really good advice if they're looking to explore down this path?
I had to learn it. I had to learn quickly. And luckily, my business partner was very good with numbers and very good with money. Is cash flow is king, right? So you're scaling a business. We went from zero to 190 staff in the first 3 years. And if you go at an average rate of, call it $1,000 a day, that's a lot of cash flow, right? We had so much work, but you've got to be able to fund the business. There were points in time, just to be transparent, where we're like, I don't know if we can afford to keep, and this is without paying ourselves. Right. And this is without paying back my mum and dad and my apartment already mortgaged. So it's funny. I think businesses get to a point where they're going to either you need to stop growing and plateau or you could break the machine. And we got to that point a few times. And I'll look back with fond memories, but like I'm talking, I couldn't sleep. I'm like, oh, I don't know where we go from here. We had offers to buy into the business. We had a lot of offers to buy into the business. I could honestly tell you, I came this close 10 times probably to going, yeah, we'll take the money. You get this shareholding. And I'm really glad we didn't and we held out, but it came so close that you wouldn't believe. So managing cash flow is an absolute art form. If you want to scale a business, it's the heartbeat of the business. It's the lifeblood of the business from a financial perspective. And getting your head around that for someone who can barely count to 10 and is not educated and I haven't done an MBA and I haven't done all these things, it was hard. I was like, what do you mean? We've got so much money coming in the door. Like, we, the business is going great. And, you know, well, John, we need to also pay our people. And there's payment terms of this and, you know, projects pausing and starting and not hitting, you know, milestones start here and there. And I fundamentally understood it. I think I just didn't want to. So learning about cash flow, managing cash flow, I'd say would be a make or break of any business. Probably the other element is I think people that go it alone, it's very hard. I had one business partner and he and I had some really challenging times, but we were generally always there to support one another. I don't think I would have got through it on my own. So, you know, a lot of people come to me now for business advice, which is funny because, again, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, maybe the most passionate guy in the room, but I'm not the smartest. And I always say, look, if you have an opportunity to partner with someone that can add a lot of value to the business, then I would do it because, you know, we just made it through. And I mean just with two of us working incredibly hard, two completely different skill sets, personalities. But we knew we could get a result together. We thought we could get a result together. So if we didn't have that partnership, I'm pretty sure that Justin would agree that we probably wouldn't have got there. And I would say the same. So having a strong partner, I think, is really important. I think business is very, very tough and going it alone is extremely challenging. So they're kind of the two key things outside of the have the fundamental building blocks of the business, you know, they're the key things I would focus on and the advice that I would give.
Maybe there's one more, John, and that's to find a prince pretty early in the journey, right? Like at the...
There's only one prince to cut.
He's a racehorse, mate. Yeah. If you can find a sweet prince, then hold on to him with both hands and don't let go.
Yeah.
I'm like Winks leashed under Flemington Strait. So, yeah.
Thank you, JK, for that time with us. Yeah, just an amazing story, a lot of impact. I'm sure people listening to the show are just going to be amazed at your journey. And, you know, this will be the number one streaming podcast now for the next 12 months and take Matt and I to a whole new place, hopefully. So thank you very much. And Matt, have you got some closing remarks for Joel?
Yeah, so JK's been the biggest influence on my career. The lessons I've learned from JK professionally and personally has been, you know, second to none. Yeah, JK talks about, you know, walking into the room and thinking they're equal. I remember walking into the room and you're presenting to the CIO of big banks and, you know, shitting yourself basically, but you kind of got over that quick. You got that confidence and trust, and now that's been really invaluable for my career. Everyone's equal and I don't have those nerves, and, you know, I'm really confident when having these large scale presentations and presenting in front of thousands of people and all of that kind of stuff. So I think I'm not the only one that would thank JK for really giving 80-20 as an organization to launch their own career. There'll be hundreds within the organization as well. But just a best special shout out to JK. He's always been a massive support. I'd be firstly coming onto the podcast and secondly with my career and also personally as well. We're obviously very, very good friends as part of it. So just a massive thanks, JK, for sort of everything you've done for me and obviously the others that have come with you on the 80-20 journey. We definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys, and applaud you for getting started. It's pretty cool what you're doing here. It's the first podcast I've ever been on, and you guys are great at hosting it. I think you talk about important topics, for your listener base. Well, I've got the platform. I want to thank everyone who's been a part of our business and journey. You know, one person doesn't get here on their own. We've done it as a team, and I thank every single person that's helped me along the way. I had a lot of people that influenced my career and, you know, were sounding boards for me, as well as our team. I don't see our team as much as I'd like to these days, given my global role, but it's something I'd like to rectify when I get some more time. But I thank everyone, our customers, our team, our partners at Microsoft. You know, I didn't get here on my own, as I said, and including you, Matt. You've been a massive part of our business. So, you know, I thank everyone that's helped me on the journey along the way because it's been an incredible ride. Would I do it again? You know, maybe in another life, but, you know, you could run the same result and get, you know, the same outcome and get, you know, five different results. You know, we've got to where we have, and I'm really proud of our achievements, but there's still a lot more to go. And just massive thank you to everyone who supported me along the way, because there's been a lot of people who have. So, and thanks for having me again on the podcast, guys.
Anytime. You're a friend of the show now, John. So anytime.
Let me know when you get the video happening. I'll go work out at the gym beforehand.
Okay,
we'll get Johnson on here when you can interview Johnson on the podcast, mate. Scott, that's a challenge, all right?
We'll get Johnson. I think it starts here and John together on the podcast. That's
our big audacious goal. Sign me up. Dr. Satch is listening to this.
All right. Have a wonderful day, John, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Cheers. Bye.
Hey, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so much for everyone for listening to our podcast. Just a few reminders. So we've set up a LinkedIn page. So we'll endeavor to put some updates on that LinkedIn page. So go on there and click follow for us. Also, don't forget to go to powertime.au and subscribe to our newsletter. And lastly, if you could please click follow on this podcast so you get the latest episodes as they come out. We're trying to get the podcasts out every 2 to 3 weeks, so there should be a good cadence with a whole bunch of new guests coming on. Now, lastly, don't forget that the views on this podcast are not the views of MCS or Microsoft, but they're the views of Matt and I and our guests. Thanks again. See you. I can't wait to see you on the next podcast.